Hello and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Sarah Fentum, and in the studio with me this week is Lafayette Mayor Tony Rozworski. Thanks for being here, listeners, and thanks for being here, Mayor Rozworski.
Thank you, Sarah, for having me.
We can just jump right in. WBAA covered a protest last week about Governor Pence's stance on resettling Syrian refugees, and they were imploring both John Dennis and you to sign a petition urging the federal government to not take a similar stance, similar to Pence. Do you have an opinion on Syrian resettlement in Indiana, and would you consider signing such a petition?
Well, thank you. I have talked about this publicly. I don't agree with the stance that Governor Pence has taken on this issue. But first, let me say that obviously national security is a serious issue, and protecting our country always does have to be our number one priority. And with the conflicts that are taking place in the world, with the acts of terrorism that we've seen, that is certainly something that is not to be taken lightly or be dismissive of. It's very important, and we all need to be vigilant, from local communities, state, to our federal government. But with that being said, I don't think reacting where fear, I think, is guiding our actions is what we need to do. I think the screening process that takes place is very extensive. I know there can be arguments on both sides, whether it's adequate or whether it's perfect. The reality is trying to screen anyone to know every potential motive or action that they might take simply will not happen. So I think we have to look at it from a common sense, pragmatic approach, and I think we have to look at it with compassion and not react out of fear. And so I think there are circumstances where we should still allow the Syrian refugees to come into the country, to come into our state. It is a difficult process. Here in Indiana, we even have churches that are supporting some of those families, their women, their children. They're fleeing some very difficult situations, and we just can't react totally out of fear. And so I would support, I don't support the same path that Governor Pence has taken. I respect that he has made that decision based on his belief, but it's not the direction that I would take. As far as signing the petition goes, that's something I probably won't do. I don't sign a lot of petitions, and the reason for that is, I'm sure the groups are very passionate about what they're doing, and I respect that, and I think it's important that citizens get involved. But once you put your name on a position for an elected official like myself, if 2 weeks from now that group makes some kind of statement that I don't agree with, that maybe I feel that they've taken part of what they're working on too far, then I've already signed the petition. I would much rather speak with the media like I am with you today and voice my opinion for the public to know. I think it's important for the public to know whether local elected officials stand on these issues, because they do affect all of us. And I would prefer to handle it that way as opposed to signing petitions for. There's a lot of groups that have a lot of petitions. And like I said, the problem is 3 weeks from now, I may not agree with some of the things that they're saying. So I think for me as an elected official, the best way to do is to work through the media like yourself to let the citizens of the community know where I stand.
Is there any other way that you can align yourselves with, not align yourself, but make it known to the state government that you don't agree with what they're doing, besides just saying that you disagree on a radio show?
Well, I'm sure they probably know by now, because it was in the Journal and Courier also, that I did not agree. I've spoken with Justin Mount, who is a regional assistant for Senator Donnelly. And, of course, we know where Senator Donnelly has been. And so, we do have those communications with state officials, such as our state senators and our local representatives, along with our federal officials. So I'm confident that up that chain, people know where people stand, and probably talking to the media, quite frankly, and you putting this information out, they're more likely going to be know that, as opposed to my name being buried somewhere on a petition.
The last time we spoke, we were taking a tour of the Wabash Riverfront downtown, outlining hopes and plans for its development over the next few decades. And you mentioned that in the future, you'd like to see a more unified downtown. You said that you wouldn't say, oh, we're going to West Lafayette or Lafayette. We're just going to go downtown. So I'm wondering, West Lafayette is spending a bunch of money on its State Street project. Are you looking to sort of take advantage of what John Dennis is doing with his downtown development?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, thank you for attending part of that. I hope that that was helpful to you to actually walk with us and with MKSK, the firm that we're working with, and is also working on the State Street project. And so I think that's a wonderful opportunity. As you know, the State Street project has several different components where it comes down to North River Road, and then from North River Road east towards Lafayette till it actually gets to the river. And so we think there's a real opportunity to, in particular, tie that last segment from North River Road to the river that they're planning on doing with our Central Reach Development Plan of the Wabash River Enhancement Corporation. We're kind of at that perfect storm here where they're doing that project. We have the 101 Main Street project for downtown. We're working on the Riverfront Promenade project. And we have this kind of perfect storm where we can tie all these together. And as part of that, you know, John and I have talked along with Rec about how do we create that unified downtown in Lafayette and West Lafayette. So literally, as you walk across the bridge, and we hope to have a second bridge someday there at Brown Street, as you saw, you know, people have those opportunities on both sides of the river. And we had to have this one larger downtown that creates a lot of new opportunities, a lot of distinction for our community of this size to have a downtown like that. And so, you know, we think that's the right direction to move. That unification of the downtowns, Lafayette, West Lafayette, how we work together, how we program, what we do at Tapawingo Park, what we do in the Central Reach on the Lafayette side, and how we tie that into State Street, we think can also be a real catalyst to help spur private development to take place. Because we don't want this just to all be public dollars or just the government. We really want public-private partnerships, which is what we have with 101 Main Street. And we feel if we implement some of these other ideas, we have a much greater opportunity of getting those private dollars to invest. And so that's really our long-term goal. And we're very fortunate to be in this time and place in both communities.
And for listeners, 101 Main is the upcoming apartment complex.
Yeah, it's the regional headquarters for Old National Bank. And then it has 99 luxury units around it and has first floor commercial. We're thrilled with the design. I'm sure some of your listeners have seen the design. If not, I would encourage them to do so. It's really going to be an iconic downtown project for us, or a landmark. With the first floor commercial, I know there's already a couple people that are interested in that and in a restaurant. So we think it's going to create some new opportunities. I love the name Mark, M-A-R-Q, which is after the Marquis de Lafayette, which we know is a very unique piece of Lafayette's history. I think that's special to a lot of people, but it's got that kind of cool piece too, shortened a little bit. And so it's just what we're trying to do. We're trying to remember our history and where we came from, but also look into the future and working to retain talent, keep young people here, create different opportunities for downtown urban living, and it's going to be a great project for us.
So speaking of connectivity between West Lafayette and Lafayette, I have to ask about the Myers Bridge. Last month you said it should be open soon, but it's still not accessible. Some people are probably wondering when it will ever get done. So what's the current status, and when will we be able to see any kind of improvement?
You kind of set me up on that one, didn't you? I stepped right into that.
Yeah.
So, you know, we talked last time, and we are making progress. We do have the railing all up on the south side of the bridge there, and we're waiting for the railing to come in so we can get the north side done. I said last week I was hoping that it would be done in 30 days. I'm still hoping that we'll meet that 30-day window, and so we can get some accessibility back open. Now, I think it's important that people realize that won't be the end of all the work on the bridge and the bridge area. As you've probably seen, we're doing a significant amount of work to the Depot Plaza itself and to the actual depot building. And then on the west side of the river, we're also going to put in an additional ramping system that we'll put in the spring. So people coming from the west side and people going to the west side will have several options. They'll have the traditional steps that they can get down. They'll have an elevator that they can use, and then on they'll have a ramping system on the website also that people that have disabilities, strollers, bicycles will also have an additional ramp. So at the end of the day, it's going to be, even though it's been a long project, and I appreciate everybody's patience, there's going to be a lot of accessibility. That bridge and that plaza area and over the rail bridge and then tying into the 101 Main Street project will be more accessible literally than it's ever been in history. And we think that's worth the wait. We know that people, it's been hard. And like I said, I appreciate their patience, but doing it right, doing it the way we've done it, it's going to be worth the wait. And we think it's going to be a great project when it's done.
So the railing still needs to be put up on one side?
Yes. Yeah, the railing is up on the south side. The railing is up, and we still need to get the railing up on the new side. And we're hoping that that will get delivered here quickly. And we've got some great weather still hanging out there for us, and we can get that up. But right now, I'm still sticking with that. I'm from last week, hoping that it'll be done in 30 days.
And the railings were the original holdup, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, they were part of the holdup. I mean, that's the holdup that's really caused us the problem here at the end, the significant delays. I've told your listeners before that we did end up doing some additional work. Once we began to take the decking off the bridge, it became apparent that some of the structure, some of the steel, the ironworks in there were really not up to standard, that there had been significant deterioration. In fact, to the point where the engineers told us that if you don't fix all this, we'll have to reduce the load limit of people that can actually be on the bridge at one time from what it currently is. And we certainly did not want to do that. We want to be able to, if we're doing the fireworks, if we're having festivals, we want to be able to have a lot of people up there to enjoy the opportunity. And so we stopped. We took the time to fix all of that and to get that right. But that would have not caused these significant delays that we're still experiencing. It was the rail, the condition of the rail with the pitting, the poor welds, the coupling joints did not go together right. It was just an inferior product that, you know, nobody wanted to accept. This is going to be there for decades to come. And so, you know, in my opinion, it's worth waiting to do it right.
And once the railing goes up, will people be able to start walking across it?
Pretty quick. After we get the railing up, a couple little things will get cleaned up, and we'll be able to open up access. We won't start on that secondary ramp till in the spring, but we can do that where we can maintain access across the bridge.
A listener tweeted about what she sees as an increase in armed robberies happening in Lafayette. And data that we have from the LPD says since 2010, the number of violent crimes looks to be increasing in the city. So do you know for sure that at least in the last couple months there has been an increase in armed robberies, or is that something that's just a visibility thing?
Well, I mean, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but it does go in spurts. I know that we had a couple month window there where I think the actual robberies were down, and now we had a spurt here recently. And they've been different types of armed robberies where they spiked again a little bit. So, I mean, that certainly is a concern, but it certainly is a perception too, and the media, you know, covers that, and as they should, and so people see that and they see it more frequently than they have in the past, and so it can create that perception. But I think the important part is, you know, where do we go from here, and what are we doing in the future? And as you remember, a couple months ago, we unveiled our plan with the Lafayette Police Department of what we're going to be doing in 2016. The budget since then has passed. There'll be five new police officers that will be added to the Lafayette Police Department that will be working in the Drug Task Force, Street Crimes Unit, Crime Prevention Unit. We're going to have additional vehicles. We're going to have a new take-home patrol car program where any officer that lives in the city limits of Lafayette will now get a take-home car. So that's going to put about an additional 24 cars in our neighborhoods, along with the cars that we currently have for people that have take-home cars for other assignments that they have that live in the city limits. That'll put about 42 cars in our neighborhoods, and we think that's a good program for us. We're doing other things with the with outreach, crime prevention. We're also going to be doing some new things with technology that we'll be announcing after the first of the year. And so we have a comprehensive approach on how we're looking at it. We all know a lot of our crime, like all across the United States, is related to drug abuse and drug addiction. where people are committing crimes, committing robberies to get money, to buy drugs, where they've become addicted to prescription medication and then went on to heroin primarily. But we still have the issues with meth. And so, you know, we're taking, but it's going to take the federal government, the state government, and locals to work together to find solutions. That it's going to take, in my opinion, some tough legislation, and it's also going to take treatment. We need additional mental health treatment, additional addiction facilities and detox centers and outreach. So it's going to really take a comprehensive approach, because communities across the country, there's been several shows on 60 Minutes that's talked about it. Heroin usage, drug addiction is driving a significant amount of crime throughout the country, and it is here in Indiana.
So you're looking to see what the state can also do in terms of stuff like Governor Pence's drug task force.
Yeah, there's going to have to be a partnership. There's going to have to be some financial resources, as I said, to help with addiction and mental health services and detox. And then I think the state, and I know they've always been reluctant, you know, how do we also make it more, continue to make it more difficult for people to get the ingredients that you can use to make meth? And I know there's concern about inconveniencing people if they have to get a prescription for it and different things like that. But I think it's important enough to our communities, to our children, to the future of our state, that we're going to have to take some of those tough stances. And being a little inconvenience is just something we're all probably, in my opinion, something we're all going to have to live with. There's been some states that have taken some of these really tough steps, and they've made significant progress in reducing the number of meth labs that they encounter each year. And I think, you know, for me as an elected official, my thought, and as a person, is I'm more than willing to go through some inconvenience if it's going to mean the reduction of meth available on the streets of our community and the number of our young people and citizens that are dying from overdoses.
I know that you have a police background. And so some crimes, there's a seasonal component. When it comes to armed robberies, could there be potentially something like that happening? Do more of them happen around the holidays, like with burglaries?
Well, there are seasonal components with burglaries and thefts like that. Robberies, and particularly the robberies that we see, and again, I don't have the data in front of me, but just in general, they really are crimes of trying to get that money to purchase narcotics. And so, you know, I'm not sure that's a seasonal, there's really not a seasonal effect to that. But many of those crimes are, and I think it's when people finally reach that breaking point and they just can't get it any other way, you know, that they resort. And we catch a lot of them. Our judges, our prosecutor's office does a very good job. I think the sentencing around here is very good. I think it's tough, as it should be tough. And I commend our judges for doing that, and we need to send that message. So, because those crimes, even though they may be doing it for that reason, and we understand that they need help, other people can get hurt during the commission of those crimes, and we need to be aware of that.
So let's change gears a little bit and talk about garbage. Lafayette has entered into a deal with the company National Cart Marketing, and they're paying the city for the rights to advertise on top of the city's new garbage cans. And so the last toter was dropped off last week. When will you start seeing money from that deal, and how much revenue are we talking about here?
Well, we should start seeing some money from that, I hope, after the first of the year. Now that we've got all of the toters dispersed, they're still working on manufacturing the lids, because it will be a different lid. There'll have to be a lid change-out process. So we're hoping after the first of the year, you know, that will begin to take place. As far as how much money that will be, if you look over a 10-year window, those toters were in the neighborhood of $1.2-1.3 million. And the contract that we have with National Cart Marketing should cover somewhere between 90% and 95% of that. And then certainly the additional money that we save from the recycling will more than compensate for the cost. So we won't have to use any tax dollars to pay for those. And then we're doing the right thing for the environment. And that's also one of the ways that we keep trash service free, because we don't pay to drop off recycling. We don't pay that 40-some dollar a ton tipping fee. That's one of the ways in Lafayette that you don't pay any additional every month right now for your trash recycling. We pick up your leaves, your limbs, your large items. And so we really need people to recycle, and we need them to use that large toter for the recycling and keep their garbage to the level of that small toter, which quite frankly is really easy to do. There is not much that you cannot recycle, and you can co-mingle. So it's an extremely easy process of recycling. And, you know, there's really no reason that we can't do it. And if we want to keep trash pickup free, then everybody needs to jump in. I've had a lot of positive comments from people that were quite skeptical, to be honest, that said they didn't think it was work, they didn't recycle, they didn't want to really mess with it, but they decided to give it a try after hearing about the program and how easy it was. And they said, you know, there's really, it works easy. It's no harder than doing the trash. And everybody ought to be doing it. So I think overall, the program has been very accepted. We're going to have to continue the education process, though. Not everybody's following it the way that we would hoped. And so we're going to have to continue that education process to get everybody on board. And if we're able to do that, then we're going to continue to provide a great service, which we do at a very, very effective and very efficient. And we want to continue to be able to do that for our citizens.
So basically what you're saying is that the advertising revenue from the garbage cans pays for the garbage cans. So they're
yes.
essentially paying for themselves.
Yeah, and that was our goal all along, to be able to do that.
I think there might have been some confusion because the trash cans look so much like the other trash cans. The new ones look so much like the old.
Yeah, and as soon as the lids are changed out, they won't. There's a special lid that so the advertising cards can be placed in. So as soon as those lids, they're manufactured in North Carolina, and the city doesn't have any responsibility for that. The National Cart Marketing, that they get the lids, they bring them in, they change them for us, they do all that, and they slide all the advertising. So I'm hoping here after the first of the year, and then that'll make the distinction a little easier for people.
So I don't know if anyone's expressed interest in advertising on the top of a garbage can. Is that anything that the city has any say in, or is it completely through this other company?
Well, the other company does the marketing. We've helped open some doors for them, helped them make some contacts and stuff. And so, but it's up to them to get out there and sell that advertisement. And we don't have to go out and do that. There are some spaces on there that the city will get to use. So if we need to put out some kind of message, or if we need to put out something like, say, Breast Cancer Awareness Month, we can put a placard in there for that, even with a code on it, so people can just swipe their iPhones or their other phones to make a donation. So there's a lot of opportunity. And with analytics the way they are these days, you'll be surprised. They'll be able to tailor that advertising to certain neighborhoods, who eats pizza a lot, you know, moms that are expecting, and they can do all kinds of different things with it. And I think over time, it'll be effective and it'll be a good program for the community.
And you mentioned this week that you're going to speak at a mayor's conference in Indianapolis, the School of New Mayors. Can you talk a little bit about that and what you might be, what sort of advice you might give to some of these people?
Yeah, well, yes, I'll be speaking at the for the Indiana Associations of Cities and Towns. They host what's called a New Mayor's School for new mayors that are elected throughout the state of Indiana, and I've been asked to do a presentation on quality of life. You know, we've been very successful here in Lafayette and West Lafayette and Tippecanoe County with a lot of new developments economically, community developments, downtown living. And so I'm going to be making a presentation kind of on a comprehensive overview of what it really takes to build a quality of life. It's not just specifically building projects or specifically creating jobs. It's how you run your government. It's transparency. It's how we work with our schools, how we work with our social services. And then, of course, how do we create jobs? How do we bring downtown development? How do we do things like READ to Succeed? So I'm going to go through kind of a comprehensive approach to what it takes to really build quality of life, and then how do you market your community to get people to want to live here and stay here and raise their families here.
I don't know if you can speak to this, but what are some mistakes you see new mayors making?
Well, I don't know if I can totally speak to that, but one of the things that we're going to really stress in our presentation is, you know, how to be accessible, that they need to be accessible. And they're going to have to be the catalyst for change in their communities. If there are projects that need to be done, if there are tough decisions that need to be made, they're going to have to make those, and they're going to have to lead. They're not going to be able to sit on the sidelines, and they're not going to be afraid to take risk and try things. You know, we talk about in the presentation Matchbox. It's a wonderful, wonderful facility, co-working facility here that we've got almost 200 members now. And it's something that we're excited to have, and it's really making a difference, I think, in our entrepreneurial spirit, creating that system of innovation, keeping young people here. And so we're going to talk about all those things. And then again, you know, how do you market your community? Lafayette's very fortunate. For the first time in the past year, we actually have a communication and marketing director. Kara Bishop is doing that for us, and she's doing a fantastic job. And we're pushing out information to our citizens and people literally around the globe in a lot different way than we used to. And we want to make sure that other mayors understand how important that is.
And speaking of mayors, there were some trends in last month's municipal elections where lots of independent mayors were elected. And as a mayor, do you think those results say something about the state and its electorate?
Well, I think what it says on a local level is people really do look to vote for the person. Who is the person that can really serve them well? Because they have the, let's face it, they have the most impact on their day-to-day quality of life, from public safety with police and fire, to the sanitation services we just talked about, to parks and recreation, to trails, to the different policies that you have that deal with complete streets and the environment, how you work with your schools. That local units of government really have that most profound impact. And I think most people realize that. And so, you know, not everybody. We still have people that vote straight party lines and things like that. But a lot of people really look to the person and who do they think is best to lead their community. And I think that's probably what that means.
In the last minute, a couple months ago, we talked about the new Prospect League baseball team coming to Lafayette. They've released the finalists for the names. Do you have a preference at all?
Well, I do, but I can't let you know what that is. That'll be unveiled Thursday at a press conference. And the Mayor's Youth Council has played a big, big role in the name that was chosen, but we're very excited to unveil that name. We think it's going to be a name the community is really going to enjoy, and the kids on the council have done a great job. They care about their community, and we hope everybody will enjoy it.
And again, those finalists are the Lafayette Lightning, the Axemen, the Generals, the Legends, and the Aviators. And that name will be announced this week on Thursday. And so that's all today for Ask the Mayor. Thanks so much for being with us, Mayor Worski. The conversation continues on our website, wbaa.org. Thanks for listening.